Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Book Echoes podcast, the podcast for writing and illustrating children's and young adult literature. I'm young adult author Connie B. Dowell, and here are my munchkins chatting in the background. We are in week three of my husband's residency, where he has to be away for like 5 days at a time. And while I pack up the house and take care of the kids. So it's been really busy and crazy. And I have not been writing, but I have been using July to plan some upcoming projects. My first serious stab at illustrating a picture book, as well as a nonfiction book for writers, which I will tell you guys a little bit more detail about later, and a cozy mystery series, my first attempt at fiction for adults. So a lot of stuff to hit the ground running in August, but July is just dreaming about writing and outlining stuff and packing our whole house up in boxes. So let's move on to the lovely and, of course, pre-recorded interview I have for you guys today, because there is absolutely no way I could possibly be recording anything in the month of July. So this pre-recorded interview, which is with author Rinda Beach about her awesome middle grade book about a young Neil Armstrong. And this comes at almost a very important anniversary, of the moon landing coming up in just a couple days after this releases. So since I am swamped and the kids are being eerily quiet, which means they've probably opened a box, I think I'm going to sign off and let you guys have a listen to the lovely interview coming up. Enjoy. All right, welcome to the Book Echoes podcast. Today on the podcast, we have children's author Rinda Beach. Welcome to the podcast, Rinda.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here and to share my stories.
Well, we're excited to have you. Would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and your books?
Sure. I seem to stumble onto careers. I said, I'm a principal's daughter. I said I'd never be a teacher. I taught second grade for 33 years. And my first year teaching second grade, I had a kiddo who said, the best thing about my class was the stories I told, which I never thought I'd be a writer, ever. I mean, I used to cry my way through college on papers. I mean, every word had to be right. And I never thought to be a writer till 2007. I had my middle son was a junior in high school, and he was going to Germany, and I was chaperoning the group. And my second night, I met a bat, the kind that flies through the sky, that's a mammal. And to make it short, I wound up holding three of its legs on the end of a mop.
Oh, goodness.
Which seemed like a really good story, but one of my fatal flaws or invitations to write is lack of confidence, never trusting that I've got it right. So I dragged in Herman the German, and that story was good garbage. And she gave me homework. Then I read another bat story, which was flat. And the lady who looked at it said, I think you've done enough with bats. They don't have legs. I mean, yes, they do, because I held three of them on a mop. Yeah. But they have a short run in the bookstore. They're only going to be good for, like, Halloween. So anyway, I decided it was time to start on something else. So I'm a teacher, and the school kind of dies in the summer. So I thought I'd do a story. I've worked on that one for 7 years. Obviously, I'm not a fast learner. I just go my own speed, and I guess the story's speed. And it seems like I tend to write about animals. I mean, I have my bat story, my ant stories. We have a lake house, and the ducks are a real problem. They think that our dock is their poop deck, and it's not. So that's how I got started with that darn bat. So I started Neil. Last January, I came up with the idea and I took a class with Mira Reisberg, and she asked for two opposite things. Well, Neil didn't really show his wind tunnel to his mom.
And which Neil is this for listeners who haven't
Okay.
looked up your book?
It is Neil Armstrong who had a wind tunnel dream. And I thought, oh, this is interesting, but if you want to go traditionally published, you need 2 or 3 years to publish a book. And if you're going to do a book about Neil Armstrong, the moon landing is coming up. So I decided to self-publish this. So I spent a year researching him. And he's a great character beyond landing on the moon. I mean, some of my favorite facts I jotted down for your audience. When he was in first grade, and first grade was the kindergarten back then, he read 100 books. And I don't think they had books like we do now, where you have all the leveled reads. And he read 100 books. Went into second grade, and he was reading on a fourth, fifth grade level. The teacher sent him to third grade. My favorite story, and for your audience, please advise your children not to do this out their windows. But he had a collection of airplanes hanging from his ceiling. And when he got too many, he would just throw them out the window and watch how they crashed, because then he could design a better plane. He was a character, but it gets better. Some of them, maybe his favorites, he'd set on fire so he could watch their smoky trail to the ground. So I don't advise for kids.
Yeah, maybe not the fire part. But were they model airplanes or paper airplanes? Presumably.
Who knows with him, because he started probably with paper airplanes. That was my guess. But he made them out of straw, out of twigs. When he was about 8 to 10, he discovered balsa wood, which was like life had never been so good. Most kids read like fun stuff. Young Neil, when he was in middle school, he read aeronautical magazines about airplanes. And not only did he read them, he had notebooks where he jotted down information about their specs, about how they were put together, and who designed them, and if they probably were wind tunnel tested, which is where I got the idea for the book. And the great thing about a wind tunnel is you can build this huge plane, but you don't have to keep building it, building it, building it, because you test small pieces of it or a tiny model in a wind tunnel. And you can see what works and what doesn't. And I was shocked. My husband built me a wind tunnel for Valentine's Day. What a great
Oh,
gift.
yeah.
Yeah. And when we put the plane in and then we turned on the fan, the weight actually went down. And you would think it would be lighter without the wind blowing, but it was something about lift. And Neil would understand that. But I'm a second grade teacher, so we didn't do lift and airplanes and wind tunnels.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. That is way better than a box of chocolates. As good as boxes of chocolates are.
I would like both. So, but and when he decided to build the wind tunnel, he was probably about 15. The summer before he turned 16 in August, he started gathering his materials, things like most kids would get a fan blade, not Neil. He got a propeller from an airplane.
Ooh.
He was the cool kid. I mean, he really was. I mean, flying planes out his window on fire. Oh my gosh. And when he designed it, he didn't want any old design. He took the design of the Wright brothers, the guys who invented the first plane that flew. he built his based on theirs. So he was just an imaginative character. One of the lines I saw, it's in his yearbook. I think somebody else went back when they had quotes. They said he thinks he acts 'tis done. And if you follow him from the time he was reading those 100 books all the way to building this airplane to landing on the moon, that's kind of, that's how he rolled, which I think is interesting. It's just, and yet he did silly things. He was in the marching band. I would have never done this, ever. He marched backwards in a parade. Who does that? Neil does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your book, Neil Armstrong's Wind Tunnel Dream. So that's about him building that wind tunnel as a teenager.
Right, right. Yeah. The first chapter I backed up and took you to age two, mm-hmm. when Neil first discovered his first plane. He went to the Cleveland Air Races. And the first chapter is kind of getting him to age 15. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the book through chapter 5 is about building it. And I only had 3 pieces of information to build that story with, which I think is kind of amazing that, mm-hmm. that I did it, because I'm not a mechanical person. I was tested by simple machines, teaching them in second grade. But thank goodness, one of my critique partners is very hands-on with that kind of stuff, and I married an engineer. So doing electricity was just crazy. I had 3 facts. I knew what he used to build it, and one of those things was that propeller. I knew that he blew a lot of fuses on the way, and I knew, I had 2 stories for the end, either mom broke her foot, or her robe blew off and a plane crashed into the window. I never found the broken foot for when she saw the wind tunnel for the first time. But I found 3 or 4 places that had the other stories. So that's what I went with.
Okay, so there was just some inconsistency in the research material.
Just a little bit. But I found the broken foot with some other sources. And if I can't find 2 or 3, mm-hmm. I can't go with it. But they had her broken foot when she discovered he was going to Purdue and he was going to be an electronic engineer, which was all good. But within a couple of years, he was going to be flying Navy fighter planes. Mm-hmm. And that's when mom broke her foot. So I'm pretty sure I got the story right. I'm pretty sure of it. Mm-hmm. For something that didn't exist, I mean, he built the wind tunnel in 1946, age 16. Yeah. You know, this story didn't exist until I started doing the research. And I had those 3 pieces to try to picture it. And I think what would appeal to some readers, especially in some states, in Ohio, it's 4th grade. In Tennessee, where my daughter taught, it's 3rd grade. It's the electrical cycle and how you set up a circuit and break a circuit. And I'm covering my face again because, I mean, all that is above my pay grade. I never did electricity other than to turn up, to flip a switch. But with Neil, I had to figure out how he would set up the circuit and how he kept breaking it, which he thought was kind of funny. And go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying that must be quite a challenge to write such a technical book. And is this your first published book?
This is my first published
book. All right.
This is it.
Yeah, you took on a big challenge.
Yep. Yeah. But I was lucky. My critique partner in Tennessee, Rick Starkey, which we'll shout out his name, he knows electricity. And at one point, I had the stove shutting down. And he said, Brenda, you can't do that. And I go, it's my story. It's fiction. I can make it up. And he goes, no, because the refrigerator and the stove would be on different circuits, so they wouldn't blow. So Neil couldn't have blown the circuit for the stove. So I had to come up with something else to build tension. So
it
was crazy. And every time I talk about it, I cover my face because it was so hard to do. because not only are you dealing with electricity, you're dealing with 1946 electricity.
Yes.
So it was interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. So let's see. Moving on, we talked a bit about kind of how you got started writing, that you started writing because you're a teacher. What age group is this book aimed at?
Okay, this is aimed for kids grades 3 through 5. But if you have a good reader, somebody who would understand the electricity, I mean, I didn't baby talk it, but you'd need to be a good reader. The first chapter is a great read aloud for any age level because it's mm-hmm. about Neil and how ornery he was. And I tend to, because I spent 33 years in second grade, that tends to be who I write for. Mm-hmm. I think I still have that second grade mind. And one of the things that I did do, because now for fun, somehow I find the most challenging things. I substitute teach, which most people, I said I would never do it again. I mean, I'll never write, I'll never teach, I'll never sub. I sub now once a week, and it lets me connect with teachers and kids, and they're my market. That's who I want to sell books to. And that's how I knew that they did the electrical cycle in third grade. And one of the things that I did do is, because I'm still a teacher, I'll always be a teacher, I have half the book is the story, and then about the other half, third, is back matter. I've got what's true about the story, because whenever I read historical fiction, I want to know that. I want to know, what did you make up? What isn't true? And basically anything that's dialogue, I made up. Mm-hmm. But I tried to match it with what I knew about Neil and his family. Then another big section is how to build a wind tunnel, which, I mean, that's what Neil was all about. And I thought it was really cool. One of my supporters who wrote a quote for me is actually a NASA scientist. And the heart moment for me with what he wrote is that this isn't just a book for a young person, it's a book for young people. And I think he wrote it because he likes the back matter so much because it has science in it. And if you're in fourth grade on, if you're doing science fair, I've given you a project.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one of the sources that I quoted, I found my original image for the wind tunnel from Instructables, which is a really cool site online that you can look up. And Goalie Guy had it turned out to be his 7th or 8th grade science fair project. And that's what I was going to use. And he was going to be kind enough to let me use the pictures. But being a writer, I edited it because that's what I do now. And he's now a senior in college and was kind enough to let me use it. But that's Instructables. If you're looking and you don't want to do wind tunnels, there is so much that they have.
Oh, yeah.
Which is neat. And I think that's the biggest part. And I have my sources down, of course, so that if you want to look up anything about Neil, if you want to write a report, if a kid would want to write a story about Neil or do a book report, if you look at what's true, you can pick out like 5 or 6 facts and write, and you've got your book report. Mm-hmm. Which is neat.
Yeah, cool. And that's a lot of good extras. I love back matter and for enriching the experience, both for kids and adults. Mm-hmm. And I see on your website, you've got at least one coloring book page.
I do. And if you go to my site, rendabeach.com, thank you for the plug. Mm-hmm. When you go to the home page, if you just scroll down, I'm not sure if the coloring page is there or if you have to go to the book link, but it's there. It's there, and you're free to download it. It's nice. And that's thanks to Cole Roberts, who was my illustrator, who did a wonderful job imagining my story, which is neat.
Cool. So, do you want to move on to talk a little bit about challenges? You hinted a bit at this before with your multiple drafts before you hit on one that felt like the winner. So, what's maybe a challenge you've kind of faced and overcome in that process?
Well, I have six other books sitting in my computer. So those have not passed the challenge. Writing is the hardest thing I've ever done. And I taught second grade for 33 years. So that says something right there. With this book, with Neil, first of all, I couldn't even traditionally publish it. If you know about writing, it takes 2 or 3 years to publish a book. And I thought of this like last spring. So there was no way. There was no way I could do it. And then I went through Cole Roberts was my fourth illustrator. And when I lost my third, I was ready to quit. Because without an illustrator, you've lost a lot of the fun that makes this a fun read. And a friend of mine said, try this one. And I only asked her after I had gone to the Helen Hunt Circle, if you know the group, they're a bunch of ladies who love to read. And they said, you have got to publish the story and it's got to be this year. And I go, yeah, I would, but I lost my third illustrator. I'm done. By the end of the meeting, they gave me three. None of them panned out, but I found Cole and the story was back on again. Another thing, I mean, getting your writing to rise to the floor that it should be on, if you think of levels of a house, it's not easy. I worked with Callie Mettler Smith to name drop, and she looked at Neil as late as November, and such, I mean, such a critique. She said that it read like a book report, rut-row. I mean, it's fine if you're second grade and you're writing a book report. But if you're writing historical fiction, and I guess I was riding the fence of how historically accurate I should make it and how much a story I should tell. And she pushed me more to the storytelling side of the fence. So I asked her in that first chapter, what reads like a book report. She gave me those. I worked on it for a couple weeks. We had our next meeting, and lo and behold, Neil had become a story, not just a book report. So that was challenging. And then I was getting ready. I had dotted all my I's, crossed all my T's, this teacher stuff. And it was April, and I met with the Downtown Partnership in Wapak to say, I have a book, let's sell it. And someone said, have you talked to Purdue? And I went, no, why would I talk to Purdue? And they said, well, they have a trademark on his name and his image. Ruh-roh. So it took me until from the second week of April till May 16th, I think May 15th or 16th, I got my permission from Purdue. So now I'm free to publish it, and they've been wonderful to work with. So it's thanks to them that I have it out and I have permission. But sometimes with writing, especially self-publishing, you run into problems that you're not expecting, and that's because you don't know what you don't know. And you won't know it till you hit it, till it blows up in your face. And then you just have to pick yourself up and figure out how to go ahead.
Yeah, I imagine that could be challenge. That is a special challenge of writing about real people and real events. I
And
felt,
even more so than in the past, because Neil wasn't trademarked till about 2015. I didn't even know how to look for it. Callie found it right away while I was talking about the challenge. And then I had friends who advised me on what to do so that I knew who to contact and how to proceed. But I'm a second grade teacher. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a businesswoman. I never did contracts before this. I never critique somebody else's artwork to say, oh, this is good and we need to change this. And at one point, I thought it was funny, and Cole was so wonderful to work with. He had put wood on the wind tunnel so that it looked more like the Wright brothers. And I looked at my list of material and there was no wood. And I said, Cole, I can't have wood in it. What can we do? And this would have been like in January, and we're running up. My deadline was like February, March to get it to Ingram, who prints on demand. And I'm going, oh my gosh, how do we fix this? And he was magic. He had it fixed within the weekend. He did a rough draft so that we kind of knew where we were going and we were on the same page.
Yeah, a lot of detail. All the detail you don't anticipate when you take on a historical project.
Or even just self-publishing. Mm-hmm. Because it's its own. I mean, it's lovely that you have control over your book. Mm-hmm. But it's awful that you have control over your book. Because when you go with a traditional publisher, they take care of all that stuff. They get it out into the stores. They advertise it. It's me, myself, and I. And thanks to this podcast, you too. So thank you.
Yay. Thank you. Thanks for sharing your experience. And it's one that, like, yeah, that is a special daunting challenge, reading real people. I've written historical fiction, but always made up people and made up events in historical places. So you can get away with a little more.
You can. But if you're going to write about somebody who's alive today, I was even told by a lawyer friend that she went to a workshop with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he was setting up one of these things so that after he's gone, his family will still get money coming in. Mm-hmm. Thanks to his career, which if I were in his shoes, that's what I would do too. Mm-hmm. So, but as a writer, you want to be able to tell their story. So I think it's always finding that balance.
Yeah, it is. Yes. Well, this has been great, Rinda. Before we go, any parting advice, any places we could find you and your books online?
You can find me at rendabeach.com. Mm-hmm. My books are sold on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I also have, and it's lovely, if you love a book, one of the best things that you can do for its author, and I have heard this from author after author, is to go in and write a review. Mm-hmm. Whether it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, there's even a site called Goodreads, which I'd never really seen up until this last year, but it directs people to where they can find your book. If you're local, I have books that are already signed in my hometown. Mm-hmm. At some local businesses, Casa Chic, Riverside Arts Center, and at the Armstrong Museum. I also do a few events, and if you're watching my page, I try to push those up. So.
Excellent. You say if people are local, so where can they find these bookstores and museums?
Oh, this is in Wapakoneta, Ohio, which is Neil Armstrong's hometown. And starting like last November, like 2018, they would have started even before that. They would have started maybe 2017. They have been planning to get things out because it's a major endeavor. And if you're in Ohio and you're in Wapak, they have a huge festival going on from July, I think it's the 11th, all the way to the 21st. So lots of big things coming into town. Excellent. Lots of great shopping opportunities, like buying my book or a t-shirt or... Mm-hmm.
Lots of great stuff. And as this podcast releases, it will all be happening.
It will be. Which is so exciting to see dreams come true.
Yes, very exciting. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And thank you for letting me talk about my book and myself. It's an opportunity.
No, it's been great to hear from you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Book Echoes podcast. You can find the podcast at bookechoes.com, on Apple Podcasts, or on Stitcher. And I would really appreciate it if you enjoyed the podcast to leave a review at one of those places or leave a comment on the show notes at bookechoes.com.